Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I welcome you to Lunatic Mondays on CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. Tonight we have a wonderful guest that I'm dying to get to know and pick her brain and see what's all about, because she seems like a lot of fun. Her name is Deborah Blake. She is the author of over a dozen books on modern witchcraft, including The Eclectic Witch's Book of Shadows, The Little Book of Cat Magic, and Everyday Witchcraft, as well as the acclaimed Everyday Witch Tarot and Oracle decks. She has also written three paranormal romance and urban fantasy series for Berkeley, and as well as a cozy mystery series launch with Forbidden Fatality in 2021. Deborah lives in a 130-year-old farmhouse in upstate New York with numerous cats who supervise all her activities, both magical and mundane. And you can find everything about Deborah on deborahblakeauthor.com. Deborah, welcome to the show tonight. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
And I love people cannot see us, obviously, and as you know, we are pre-recording because people's agendas are crazy, but there is obviously a black cat present on the interview, so she's not kidding when she puts on her bio that her cats are such a big part of her life.
This is Koshka. He's my main supervisor. He's actually a little bit like a dog. Whichever room I'm in, he just follows me in there, and he has to be where I am and, you know, tries to help me, you know, write the books, which is not as helpful as you'd think once he starts, you know, walking on the keyboard. But yes, I have five cats at the moment. That's as it has been pointed out to me numerous times, that is a lot of cats. I cannot argue with that, but you know, they're fun. They keep me in line. They give me motivation to keep writing because I have to keep feeding them.
Is that how you got into witchcraft, through the cats?
Pretty much my whole life. It's just a coincidence that yes, many witches have cats, but I literally have had cats since I was a little kid. So they're just my thing. I am an official crazy cat lady. And a witch. You can be both,
I guess. So how did you actually get into witchcraft?
Well, I mean, I think I probably was always a witch. I just didn't know there was a name for what it was that, when I was a teenager, I had some psychic experiences, and I've always been really drawn to nature. And I was never particularly comfortable with the traditional religions. Yeah, I was brought up Jewish, and my heredity as a Jew is a wonderful thing, but the religion itself did nothing for me. And, I did some searching, hung out with the Unitarians for a while, very cool bunch of people, studied Buddhism for a very long time. And it was close, but not quite there. And then when I was in my late 30s, I had a friend who kept inviting me to come do stuff at her house. And I'm not a very social person. It's not that I don't like people. I just like them in small amounts for short periods of time. And I was like, I don't know, this sounds sort of strange. And so finally one Samhain, Halloween, she said, oh, I'm just having a few people over. We're going to, have a little feast. We're going to do a little ritual. I really think you're going to like it. And I said, oh, okay, fine. Went over. Her idea of a few people was about 30. in a small apartment. And people kept hugging me and saying, "Merry meet." I didn't know who any of these people were. And yeah, we had a lovely feast. It was fine. I kept thinking, what on earth have I gotten myself into? And then we went outside to the park next to her apartment. And we did a ritual. And as soon as the circle was cast, I was home. It was so right. And I had been reaching out for years for something, for deity in some form. And this time, somebody reached back and basically went, "Well, it took you long enough." And literally from that moment on, that woman became my first teacher, my first high priestess. And that was the beginning of my practice. But yeah, I was sort of a late bloomer. I did not come to it in my 20s or even my early 30s. And the really funny thing about it is that I was talking to another friend who was a witch, a couple of weeks later, they knew each other. And I said to her, "Hey, Carrie, you're not going to believe it. It turns out I'm a witch." And she went, "Yeah, I know." And I went, "What do you mean you know?" She said, "Oh yeah, I've known for ages." And I went, "Well, why didn't you tell me?" And she said, "Nobody can tell you. You have to find out for yourself." And I think that is absolutely true. Over all of the years that I've spent since then, I'm 63 now, so I've been doing it for a while. And of course, I've written a lot of books, so people reach out to me all the time. And one of the things they say is, "How do you know if you're a witch?" And I say, "Ask." It's not, there is no hard and fast rule. It's different for everyone. I just knew the moment the circle was cast.
My jaw just dropped to the floor when you say your age, because you don't look a day over 50, but.
Well, that's what comes of roasting all those babies over, bonfires and, casting evil spells in the woods. Actually, it's genetic good luck. I can't even take any credit for it. Both my parents are pretty young looking too, but. Yeah, I thank you.
I get that a lot too, that I don't look my age, but I don't know. But the thing is, it's
I
funny.
I think it helps to be perpetually immature.
That too. Yeah, I mean, when you're happy and you don't have to worry about everything all the time, I mean, you worry about things, but you cannot not worry with the stage of the world. Right?
Oh my goodness. No, I worry constantly. I mean, that's like my biggest hobby right now. It's just worrying about everything. And for the people who can't see, my hair has in the last like 4 years or so become much more silver than dark brown. It used to be dark brown with these very nice silver streaks. And now it's silver with a few little dark brown streaks. But I think, some of it is genetics. Some of it is, I try and lead a healthy life. Some of it is honestly staying out of the sun, because, the sun will age you. But a lot of it is simply genetic good luck. My sisters, I have two sisters, and they both also look much younger than their ages. I'm sure it'll catch up with me eventually. Yeah.
Do you have kids that you ever birth?
I have a stepdaughter who is, she's 41. I don't know how that's possible. And she's also a witch, actually. And I'm in upstate New York and she's out in California. So I don't see her nearly as much as I would like to. But she actually ended up moving to San Jose because we went to PantheaCon together back in the years when PantheaCon was a huge conference out there, and she just fell in love with the area and all the pagans in the area and moved out there and left me here in the snow.
I was asking because sometimes I'm convinced that not birthing children also keeps you young. But anyway,
I let somebody else birth her and then I raised her.
Yeah, I did the same.
Yeah, somebody else did the tough bit, and then I just, I kept her alive for the rest of it.
I have a grandson who is 15, and people ask me, like, "How can you have a grandson when you never have kids?" And I'm like, it's called magic.
Yeah. Well, you
You
know,
know?
family is not necessarily anything to do with blood. You know, it's, you know, one of the things I belong to a coven, and you know, this is not the one that I started out in. This is one I started myself. We've been together, most of us, since 2004, which is a really long time for a group. I mean, Circle Sanctuary has existed for, you know, an insane amount of time, but that's really unusual. And the women in this group are my family. I was there when, you know, I married some of them. I, you know, helped them give birth. We've been there through the good stuff, the bad stuff, and they are as much my family as the people who are related to me by blood. And my stepdaughter, certainly, I mean, she came into my life when she was one. She doesn't remember any time I wasn't there. And so, yeah, she's my kid, you know, and, you know, it's just one of those gifts from the gods. Sometimes I think they compensate you. You know, I didn't end up having, you know, children of my own body, and both of her parents were, well, less than optimal. And so we like to say we're each other's consolation prize.
That is magnificent.
And it, you know, I love the fact that she's turned out to be a pagan too. I mean, I did not encourage it. I didn't discourage it. And I let her, you know, come to rituals and things, but I wanted her to find her own path. It just happens that that path ended up being the same as mine, which was wonderful. So, yeah, but yeah, I mean, if she'd wanted to be something else, that would have been fine with me.
So you were telling us about the beginning, right? These friends that knew, they knew you were a witch. You didn't know you were a witch. Then they tell you like, yeah, we knew the whole time. And it was for you to find out. And you have told us about this coven that you are part of now, that they're like your second family or your mad
Yep,
family.
that's Blue Moon Circle is, and I mentioned them in most of my books, or if not all of my books. They show up a lot.
Tell us the in between. Tell us the first covens that you were part of, because I'm sure some of that may have inspired the book that I have on my hands.
It did actually. Well, actually, the thing that inspired the book that you have in your hands was the beginning of Blue Moon Circle, the one that I'm in now. What happened with my first coven, and it was interesting because the woman who was the high priestess who ran it, did not in the beginning call it a coven. She called it a study group. And anybody who was interested could come. It met every Thursday night at her house. And, you know, there were people who were witches. There were people who thought they might be witches. And over the years, as more, you know, more of us sort of stuck around, she finally did at the end up calling it a coven. But she was brought up in a Wiccan tradition, so she taught us mostly sort of the Wiccan style of witchcraft, and so many of my roots come from that. I've sort of branched out from those roots. I don't always call myself a Wiccan these days. I'm more likely to call myself a witch or a pagan. The only time really I use the term Wiccan is if it's something that I think somebody's going to understand better. You know, people who don't know anything about witchcraft, if you say you're a witch, they usually want to go run and hide. If you say you're a Wiccan, they may go, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Whatever. But yeah, so I was with that coven for about 5 years, maybe a little bit longer, and I, you know, finally went to her and said, you know, I think I'm ready to do my high priestess study. What should I do? And so she gave me a year and a day of, you know, more reading and having me, you know, put on, you know, lead the group things, lead some really large public rituals at the local Unitarian church. I did a Yule that had 60 people. That was actually it was really great fun. A lot of pressure, but great fun. But I was in theater, so you know, yeah, no big deal. And then when I felt like I was ready, I waited for her to feel like I was ready, and it didn't happen. And it didn't happen. And I finally ended up leaving that group in part because she got a boyfriend that didn't like me, and there was some, interpersonal issues, as often does bring a group crashing to its knees. But it also, I sort of realized that she was never going to feel like I was ready because she liked being the only high priestess. She didn't, it was one of those. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm extremely grateful for everything that she taught me and for bringing me to this path. We just had hit a point where it was no longer the place for me to be. And that happens when you practice with others. And so then I spent about 9 months practicing by myself while I tried to figure out what I wanted to do. I did finally a self-dedication as a high priestess with a couple of friends, one of whom was a witch and one of whom wasn't. And it was really great and meaningful. And I basically dedicated myself to, serving the witchcraft community and being there for other witches in whatever form the goddess sent, down the road for me. I didn't know yet what that was going to look like. And sort of had this idea in my head of what kind of group I wanted to start for myself, which ended up not being at all what Blue Moon Circle was. Blue Moon Circle started with two other women. But, I was going to have this big group. I was going to invite all the witches I knew. And we did, when we had holidays, we would invite a bunch of sort of peripheral people we'd practice with or people who were interested. But the group itself was me and these two other women, both of whom had been practicing for probably 20 or 30 years and had been solitaries because they never found the right group. And the three of us, we still practice together. We formed the core of what is still Blue Moon Circle. And the way the group got its name was because there were only three of us. And if one of us couldn't make it, we'd go, we'll get together next time. So in the beginning, we only met once in a blue moon. And so that's where that name came from. And then we had a couple of people who came often enough that, they weren't ready to say they were a part of the group or that they were witches, but they were there almost the whole time. And again, one of those people ended up finally going, yeah, I guess I am a witch. It took her like 10 years. I don't know. But, like I said, it hits everybody differently. And so the book Circle, Coven, and Grove was actually based on our first year of practice as a group. As the high priestess, I came up with, we did new moons, full moons, and then the eight Sabbats. And so, I wrote rituals for all of those things. And I remember thinking, gee, I wish there was a book that was for, somebody who's either starting a coven or, is thinking of starting a coven and that just hands it all to you. It goes, here's a year's worth of stuff. You don't have to think about it, figure it out as you're going along, and then you can do your own thing. And had, some hints and things. And I was in the shower one day, as one gets, those thunderbolts. I was sort of thinking about how I wished I had that book, and that voice in the back of my head went, well, maybe you should write it. And I'm like, what? Who's that? Where? What? And of course, it was the gods giving me a not even subtle nudge. And I thought about it. I talked to a couple of people. I'd actually been writing my whole life, but fiction. It had never occurred to me to write nonfiction. And I'd never really finished any of the fiction. I wrote some short stories, sent them out, got rejected, gave up for 5 years, wrote half a novel, didn't finish it. So, I wrote, but I didn't write professionally. And I never considered writing nonfiction. And, I said to one of the women in my group, I had this idea, but it seems sort of silly because, anybody can write rituals and spells. And she went, they can't. I can't, it occurred to me that I'd been missing the point, which was that just because it was easy for me, that it came naturally to me, I'm also a natural leader. It's just part of who I am, despite having been like this incredibly shy kid. If there's a task, if there's something that needs to be done, I'll still go, well, all right, this is the way it needs to be done. Let's just do it this way. This is the most practical and simplest way, and everybody will be happy. So I started writing the book, and I basically went online to Llewellyn's website because I knew I wanted to try Llewellyn first, since half the books on my bookshelf came from Llewellyn. And I went online and I looked at what they wanted you to do if you were going to submit a manuscript. And I think it was like the first 50 pages plus an outline of the whole book. You know, you had to have the table of contents and, you know, some facts about yourself. And, you know, they had, you know, how they wanted it formatted and things. And they did say, and it, you know, it'll probably take about 6 months before anybody even gets back to you. So I wrote the first 50 pages and I got everything put together. And this was back in the dark ages. I printed it out and mailed it in. And here's the funny story about this book. So 2 weeks later, I got an email from Alicia Gallo, who is my editor at Llewellyn, who I love and adore. And it said, we're really interested in this book. Could you please send us the rest of it? And I went, but it's 2 weeks. You said 6 months. There was no rest of the book. I hadn't written it yet. I didn't know a lot about publishing. So I did not realize that by the time, you know, that it wasn't like a, you have to do it right now. So I literally sat down and wrote the rest of the book in 5 weeks. And this is the fastest I've ever written anything in my life. My mother, who also writes and who is a really great technical writer, took out the 476 extra commas, corrected the, few little glitchy things. Then I sent it back in. And guess what? I waited 6 months to hear back, because the fun thing was that Alicia had just started her job at the same time that I was starting to write. And she had what she has since referred to as an eerily empty desk, which has never happened, since. Mm-hmm. And so my book landed on her desk when she was just starting. And so she looked at it right away. But by the time, the 5 weeks had passed, there were, dozens of other manuscripts. And of course, the rest is history. They loved the book and bought it. And, I got all excited. And then I went, now what do I do? Because I hadn't planned to make a career out of it. I was like told to write the book. I wrote the book. And then I went, this was kind of fun. I sort of like this. And I started working more seriously on the fiction because I now no longer had the excuse that I'd never finished anything. And so I did, and it took me a number more years to break into the fiction side because it's very different. It's apples and oranges, basically. You have to have an agent for the fiction for the most part, which I didn't have to have for Llewellyn. So I put out the book and people loved it. Bless them. And a lot of people read it who were not in covens and still liked, the rituals and found them useful and were able to convert them to use as a solitary. And then it went out of print because that happens sometimes. The people who were going to buy it bought it, mm-hmm. and not enough more people were buying it. And you never really know why that is as an author, and you can't take it personally. Lots of books eventually go out of print. And so I said, okay, that's sad. My first baby is out of print. But by that time I had I don't know, six or seven other books.
When did it came out originally? When was the first time that it came out in the world?
It came out in 2007. I wrote it in 2005 and it came out in 2007. And I'm not really sure when it went out of print, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. And I put it out myself, basically, got it a new cover because Llewellyn owns the rights to the original cover. And, I put it out myself so that people could find it if they wanted it, but I didn't really put a lot of effort behind it because I was busy writing new books. And then, oh, goodness, last year, maybe time blurs together for me. I'm old and the COVID thing, it's like I don't, ever since COVID hit, I don't know what day, month, year it is. It's all, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
One long week after COVID.
It's very strange. But yeah, so sometime last year, I got contacted by these really lovely people at Crossed Crow Books, who I had, I will admit, never heard of before then. And they were actually asking me if I would be willing to write a foreword for a book they were reissuing for another author. And I looked at it and I went, oh, I love that book. That book is on my shelf. And it was another thing where they explained to me that, yeah, it had gone out of print and part of their, they were putting out new books, but they were also reissuing a whole lot of what they considered to be really classic books that should still be out there. And I said, first of all, yes, I'd be happy to write a foreword for her book. I think it's a great book. It should be out there. And then I sat down and I thought about it and I went, well, And I had actually just gotten word literally like a week or two before, because that's the way the universe works, that a second book of mine, which is, what's the other book? Witchcraft on a Shoestring was also going out of print. And of course, by this time I had, I don't know, 12 books out or something. So yes, sad, but not, not tragic. But I thought, well, here's two books. I wonder if they would have any interest in putting them out. So I wrote back to the, folks in charge and I went, just so you know, I have these two books that are, out of print or going out of print from Llewellyn, if you would have any interest in them. And they all jumped up and down and went, oh boy, yeah. And I went, oh boy, yeah. And so now Circle Coven and Grove, A Year of Magical Practice, is back out in the world with a beautiful foreword by Patty Wigington, who's somebody I really admire in the witchcraft community and have been sort of online pals with. We sort of follow each other around. We don't, talk about our personal lives, but we cheer each other on. And they gave it a stunning cover. I mean, a really, really beautiful cover. I could not love this cover more. And they actually have a limited edition hardcover, which is out, which is also very cool. And yeah, it makes me really happy because, there's something about your first book that, this started a whole career I had no idea was waiting for me. And it was sort of sad that that book in particular went away. And there are, in fact, not a lot of books out about covens. I just wrote another one for Llewellyn, the Everyday Witches Coven, because I wanted to sort of update what I had in this one. And you can easily have both books. They have different things in them. But when I went looking to see if there was any need, I was amazed. All of the Coven books that I had read when I was starting out are on print now. All of them, every single one. And I know that there are covens out there. It's not like I'm in the only one.
And because I am so very lucky to know Blake and Wick, I can picture them jumping up and down.
They have been wonderful to work with. In fact, the whole crew there, everybody has just been like the original cover that they sent me the mock-up of was good, but it wasn't quite right. And I said, well, could you change this and do that? And they did it, and then it was perfect. Yeah, they're wonderful. I love working with Llewellyn too. I feel like now I have two families instead of just one, you know, which is great. And, you know, one of the things that I was worried about, and it turned out I didn't need to be, was I thought, oh, you know, are the folks at Llewellyn gonna, you know, feel like their toes are being stomped on because I'm reissuing these books with somebody else? And they went, no. You know, we didn't want to have them out anymore. They weren't making enough money for us. If somebody else wants to put them back out there, that's great. So, yeah, no, it's they're
And
it, they're
I believe
wonderful.
after a number of years, you get the right back or something like
Yeah, what's one of the things that happens, there's two ways you can get the rights back to a book. One is that they basically can write to you and say, you know, we're going to take this out of print. You know, do you want your rights back? And then you fill out a piece of paper and you say, yes, thank you very much. And you get them back. Sometimes, like with some of my fiction books, which have not been selling well, but they haven't, the publishing company hasn't taken them out of print. Those you have to, and this is where it's handy to have an agent to do this crap for you. Then you sometimes have to say, okay, the contract said that if you sell less than X number of books in a year, we can ask for the rights back. Guess what? We're asking for the rights back. In the case of Llewellyn, you know, they're very cooperative about that kind of stuff. If they're not selling it, they have no problem giving you your rights back, or at least I have never had a problem with that. You know, they're very author centric. You know, they want their authors to succeed, and you know, if it isn't working for them, they're fine with you doing something else with it.
What amazes me now is that I see a lot of authors, because these folks on CrossCrow are really doing a lot
They're
of good
stunning.
work.
Yeah, they're, I mean, literally, I hadn't heard of them, and now they're everywhere. I don't know how they have the energy. They must be much younger than I am. That's all I'm saying.
Well, they're very young and they're very good at what they do, and they love working. So,
Yep.
you know, they work. So, but what I've seen is a lot of authors that they're getting something out on this publishing house and something out on this publishing house, and then us, the public, are like, yes, please, we want it all. So the book, obviously, Circle, Coven, and Grove, A Year of Magical Practice. You mentioned on the book, yes, it's for covens, but it could be used by anybody. Why do you think that covens lately, and I say lately as of probably 10, 15 years, people are kind of like walking away from covens, or they don't want that structure, or they don't want, I don't know if I'm answering my own question, they don't want the discipline. I don't
Yeah.
know. What do you think?
Well, for one thing, I'm not sure that's really true. I think covens are changing. That was one of the things that I actually addressed in the new book, is that covens don't necessarily look like what they used to look like. I have a friend who has been practicing with the same one other person for many years. They started out in a bigger coven together. The coven broke up because of the reasons covens break up. And the two of them have been practicing nonstop for 10, 15 years. They're just a teeny tiny coven, you know? And then there's the covens that are not as formal. I mean, I think as people move away from the Wicca style of things, which some people still, you know, practice traditional Wicca covens, and there's nothing wrong with that. Whatever works for you. This is the theme of every book I have ever written, is whatever works for you, as long as it's not hurting anybody else, go for it. There is no wrong way. There is no one right way. But I think that what people are finding is that the traditional covens, the covens that existed when I first started don't work for as many people as they used to. Maybe they're too formal, or maybe they don't like the rules, or maybe they think there are rules that there aren't. You know, maybe they think there has to be a high priestess and a high priest. I used to call myself a high priestess because, you know, that was, you know, part of my, you know, my upbringing as a witch. I've now been practicing with the same people for so long. There's nothing high about me. You know, we're all equal. I am not any more priestess than anybody else in this group. Yes, I happen to be the one who's comfortable writing the rituals. Every once in a while, somebody else will lead a ritual, you know, if they have something they're particularly inspired by. But for the most part, it's me. But I don't feel, I'm more of a facilitator than a leader, really, at this point, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think some of it is that maybe people are just not calling it a coven anymore. I also think, you know, from the emails that I get and the messages I get on Facebook, a lot of people are having a really hard time finding a coven. It's not that they don't want to be in one. They don't know where to look, or they're living in a part of the country where it's not really safe to be obvious about the fact that you are looking for a coven. You know, where I live is a relatively rural area of upstate New York. It's a small town, except that we have two colleges, and the fact that we have two colleges sort of makes us bigger. But the area itself is made up of a whole lot of littler towns, and there, since my original high priestess stopped doing her thing, nobody else has stepped up to be the public face of witchcraft. I mean, people know who I am because I ran a store in town that was an artist cooperative shop, and I had my books there. I'm not in the broom closet by any mean, but, you know, my coven is not an open coven. We don't just allow anybody because we've worked together for so long. We occasionally have somebody new, but it's very rare. And I couldn't tell you. I know there are covens out there. I couldn't tell you how to find them. I couldn't tell you if there's anybody who's accepting new members. It's just, I mean, I know there's a crap ton of witches in this area, but the ones who are in covens are not making themselves obvious. And, you know, there used to be some online places that you could find people, like Witchfox. Oh my God, that Witchfox, you could type in your area and, you know, if there was a coven, they could register there and you could find them. There is no such thing anymore. So I think some of it is not that people are leaving covens. I think they'd like to be in covens and they can't find them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, well, start your own. Find one or two people of like mind. If that's where you got to start, start your own.
Yeah.
And use my book.
And you know what? And you're correct. A lot of people like to use the word study group. And, mm-hmm. you know, they feel more comfortable. And it's a lot of the times it boils down to semantics, right? Because it's like when people, I am very proud to say I'm a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are people who are doing work like I do, or even more activism than I do. And they're like, but don't call me feminist. And it's like, yeah, but you are a feminist.
Yeah. Well, and that's why the book is called Circle, Coven, and Grove, because my group called themselves a circle because the other people in it were not comfortable with the word coven. Now it doesn't bother them, but back in the beginning, it made them sort of twitchy. And then a grove, of course, is really more of a druid kind of a term, but it was meant to say, doesn't matter what you call yourself, just if here's how to practice with other people.
So before we run out of time, because I cannot believe we've been at it for about 40 minutes, tell us a little bit for those like me that didn't saw the first edition or the first print. Is there anything different? Is it all the same?
The book itself is exactly the same. The only thing that's different is there's this beautiful foreword by Patty. And a prettier cover. Yeah, if you own a copy of the first one, you have this book, you know, other than the foreword. I really didn't change anything because I did, you know, I mean, there might have been a typo, yeah, but I, you know, there, I felt like the book still stood up, you know, over time. You know, the rituals are still useful. You know, there are a few aspects of my own practice that have changed, and that's what's in the new book. But for people who are just starting out, you know, or who feel like their coven needs a boost, this book still does exactly what I wanted it to do in 2007, but it is the same book. And people have asked me that because, you know, if they already own a copy, no, you don't have to. I mean, you do. You need one with both covers. You know, yeah, you want one with both covers.
I was just going to tell you, if you're a fan, yeah, you want it, you know, because it's like, if you're a fan, how are you not going to have it? Like,
well, and Patty's foreword, I mean, she made me cry. It was so sweet. And it really is a lovely little addition to the book. And, you know, if you've used your old one a lot and it's all worn out, maybe you need a shiny new one. But there's also plenty of people who didn't get it. And so they can, I know that new book smell, yum.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there are people who missed it the first time around or didn't come to their practice until it was out of print or whatever. And hopefully they will all run out and you know, buy a copy because, as I mentioned, I do have cats to feed. And, you know, somebody's got to help me with that because the five's a lot.
And, of course, the book is every chapter is a month. And you have specific practices for that month. The rituals. Tell us a little bit about how it's laid out for people that know nothing about the book.
Well, basically, it's because it is a year of practice. Each month has a new moon ritual and a full moon ritual. And then, of course, the months that have Sabbats in them also have a Sabbat ritual. And you don't necessarily have to do like the new moon ritual, you know, for January is a blessing and consecration of a book of shadows, because that's how we started out. Yeah, we you know, created a book of shadows for the group and then blessed and consecrated it. If you do that in February or June, then feel free to do that ritual in February or June. You know, this is a guide. It's not a you must do it this way. This is like if you don't know what you want to do, try this. But you can move things around. You can do, you know, things that are different in different months. If the banishing ritual feels better for you in November than it does in March, then do it in November. And there's some crafty projects because we're a crafty bunch of people. So you can always do those projects at some other time. And this is where, for the folks who are not in a coven, there's a lot of stuff in here that is still very applicable to a solitary. You know, you can still do the craft things, and you may with the spell just have to change the word we to the word I.
Yeah,
I have faith in you all. I know you can do it. You know?
Yes.
And then there's some Wicca basics and, you know, some group practice essentials, which are sort of my little do this, don't do that.
I love the etiquette. I love
the circle etiquette. That's something, this was one of the first things I learned as I was doing rituals where we invited people who were not part of the circle all the time. I made this assumption, and you know what happens when you assume, I made this assumption that everybody knew the rules of being in a ritual circle. And then somebody would get up and leave in the middle to go to the bathroom, or there's like their phone would go off and we'd be like, wait, no, why is your phone on? And so I finally, for my own group, wrote up this list of circle etiquette and handed it out to new people so that they would have the basics of, yes, if you need to leave the circle, ask somebody to cut you out, you know, don't Don't interrupt people if we're passing the speaking stick. They get to speak. You know, the stuff that I took for granted. But of course, if somebody didn't teach it to you, how would you know it? It wasn't the people who were, yeah.
I have two anecdotes that you will love or love to hate. The first one, my very first weekend teacher, whom I've been thinking about lately a lot. I need to call him Marty Couch. He will tell us, you know, like be very mindful of how you express your intention. And somebody was waiting for a check. And they called their check, pardon me for repeating, but if I don't repeat exact words, it's not gonna sound.
Right.
This person says, my intention is that I get my goddamn check.
Oh no.
So Marty stopped him and said, please allow me to suggest that you say I have received my blessed check. There
Yes.
you go. And so that happened, and that's when I learned very quickly how to explain to people before you go
Yep.
how to set your intent. And then a few years later, Deborah, what I have was I was running the ritual, and this person wanted to banish their neighbor. That was their words.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, we cannot banish your neighbor. And they said to me, but it's only one neighbor. I say, I represent a half a neighbor. You cannot banish your neighbor. You can banish how you feel about your neighbor, but you cannot.
Right, or you can protect yourself from their energy. If there's something about their energy that is bothering you, protection work is always fine. The banishing thing, that could backfire badly. Yeah,
Say
and
the least.
that's one of those things that you do have to be careful, and not every witch agrees on which things are appropriate and which are not appropriate. There are folks who believe that hexing is okay, and that is a personal choice. I personally do not do it because of the, first of all, the possibility of things coming back to bite me, but also because I try and have faith in the universe taking care of things. I will do protection work. I will do, but I also, the people who do hexing, I'm like, that's you. That's your choice. If you're comfortable with that, I'm just not. I certainly understand the motivation behind some hexing. Like, there's, a very famous witch who was known for hexing rapists, with her group. And you probably know who I'm talking about. I'm not gonna name names. I am 100,000% sympathetic with that particular kind of hex because there are, reasons. But I wouldn't do it. That's just not how I would handle it. I might ask for justice. And hope that the gods would strike them down with lightning, but I wouldn't put it out there like that. I would just say, please send justice. But, that's the thing about witchcraft is that everybody is a little bit different. There are no two witches alike, which is great. And not, while many of us agree on our practices, say 90%, there's often that 10% difference, and that's okay. If there is somebody who does things that you really disapprove of, then don't associate with them. I mean, I have a few people that I no longer, follow them or support them or whatever, because I consider some of their actions to be over the line. But that's just me,
And it's
and
a
I
personal
would
preference, like you say, because
exactly.
I have done, you know, like that type of hex the patriarchy type of thing where I've done that. And I would rather hang out with somebody that does that
Right.
than to hang out with someone that does love spells. As
Oh,
in,
love spells are one of my huge bugaboos. That's the other thing you'll find in all of my books is me going, don't do love spells. Don't do them. You can do open to love spells. You can do, so please send me love in whatever form is best for me right now. But the love spells that name somebody's name, bad idea. Ask me how I know.
oh, you
Like,
can ask
oh
me
yeah.
how I know.
Yeah, young witch, stupid witch, just saying when the gods choose to teach you a lesson on that one. Oh no. So
I
yes,
know.
somebody says don't cast love spells. I'm telling you, do not cast love
I
spells.
have the exact same reasons that you do for not casting
Yep.
love spells. I want to kind of start saying goodbye with that because you will laugh. It's knowledge. I've shared with people this.
Yeah.
It's not a secret. When I was a young witch, I was in love because, one does. What I did is I braided a tiny little braid of my hair. I cut it and I gave it to him. And I told him, because I never want to stop loving you.
Oh, that's such a bad idea.
Well, 18-year-old little
Yeah, you
girl,
don't know when you're 18.
she was so in love. She didn't know the difference between
You
her
know,
chakra and.
I was in my late 30s when I made my boo-boo, so I apparently didn't know that much either.
It happens, but that's why you have the gray hairs that are not
Yep,
for free.
exactly. I earned every one of these gray hairs. I worked hard for these things.
And thanks to that experience, I became very aware of two things. You don't do love spells, no matter how small or how harmless they may seem. And two, I'm very good at cutting cords
Yeah.
because I have to learn how to cut for
It
myself.
took me a year to undo my mess. I
Oh.
was so sure that this person was supposed to be with me, so sure. And then, after I cast the spell to say, oh, please send him back to me, and he came back, like a month after that, I went, oh, I was wrong. He's crazy as a bed bug, and I really don't want him in my life. And then I could not get rid of him. He kept showing up. He would, like, I could feel him thinking about me. It was, I did cord cutting. I did banishing. I did everything. The gods were determined I was going to learn this lesson down to my toes. And finally, after about a year of sweating it out and being really uncomfortably connected to somebody I did not ever, ever want to see again, they took pity on me. And, a friend said, oh, here, try doing this. And I went, oh, okay, thank you very much. But yeah, don't do love spells. The two old ladies are telling you. Don't do it
Don't do it. Don't
because they are nearly as, and this is the other thing that I say in my books when I talk about love spells. How would you feel if you found out that the person you loved with all your heart had cast a love spell on you to make you love them? Wouldn't you doubt whether your love was real? Wouldn't you wonder if you only loved them because they cast this spell on you? Wouldn't you feel like you would have liked to have had the free will to make that choice for yourself? If you wouldn't want it done to you, don't do it to somebody else. That
Exactly.
is Deborah Blake's Rule of Witchcraft 101. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and don't frickin' do unto others as you would not want done unto you, because it ain't cool. And the gods are paying attention. Don't you think they're not?
Yeah. And it goes deep into like what do you really want? And what you really want is to be loved, and to be loved, you need to be open, you need to be ready.
Yep.
So, I guide my apprentices and I guide my clients. Like, if what you want is a love spell, how about we work into you being open, you being
Right.
willing, you being coherent with what kind of love you want?
Well, and start by learning to love yourself, because
Exactly.
if you cannot love yourself, no one else can love you. And that is a hard thing for people to learn, because it's a whole lot easier to love other people than it is to love yourself. And to accept yourself with all of your flaws and, you know, the things that are wrong with you, or the things that maybe aren't the way you wish they would be, you know, that aren't necessarily of the flaw you think it is, you know. So, yeah, we could talk about this for a whole nother hour.
Yeah.
One habit.
And so thank you so much, Deborah, for being here. I just want to remind people that we have over 1,000 hours of podcasts on CSM Podcast. We have Circle Talk. We have Circle of Nature. We have Blue Marble. We have Songs of the Pagan Tribe. We have Paganos del Mundo in Spanish and Pagaos del Mundo in Portuguese. And we have, of course, Lunatic Mondays. You can go to Blog Talk Radio and find, like I said, over 1,000 titles that you can listen, upload, download, and share. Or you can go to the Circle Sanctuary website. I forgot the word website. Circle Sanctuary website, and go to the CSMP little section. And from there, you can jump to the archives. And there's since 2018, so there's like 5 years, 4 years of podcast now. What I have left to say for you, Deborah, is thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for reissuing this book that is really good. People need to have it, whether you're in a coven, modern coven, different coven, or a coven of you, yourself, and I. It's a great read. Thank you for being on the show. I leave you the microphones so you can tell us where people can get your book and where you're going to be going next for the rest of the fall and winter season.
Well, they can find the book pretty much anywhere you can find any books. I mean, obviously, you can get it, you know, directly from the Crossed Crow Books website. And that may be the only place the hardcover is. I'm really not sure, because it's a limited edition, if you want the really, really special one. And otherwise, you know, you can go strolling into your local indie bookstore and ask them to order it, or go to a pagan store if you have one, and if it isn't on their shelf, ask them to order it. Or you can go on Amazon and all those other usual places. I also, as I always do, have signed copies on my Etsy store. So if you come find me on Etsy and you want a signed copy, you know, I do that, just because it was something people asked for. As for what I'm doing, I have no concrete plans. I did, however, just give an online tarot class, which went really well, and people really seemed to enjoy it. And so I've been debating doing more online classes, whether it's like a more advanced tarot class or an online class for the people who missed the first one, or even just an intro to witchcraft class, which people sometimes have asked for. You know, I used to do all that stuff in public, and now I'm not traveling as much because, well, there's this plague. And also just because my cats don't like it when I leave the house. So yeah, if you follow me online, and, you know, I may end up doing those, and, you know, I'll announce it. You can also find me, and if that's something you'd want, you can ask me. If I get a bunch of people that ask me, that'll probably motivate me to do it. All the links to every place I am online are at deborahblakeauthor.com, and that's Deborah the long biblical way, Deborah. I'm on the thing that used to be called Twitter, and Facebook and Instagram. I've just started doing TikTok. I haven't really quite figured it out yet, but every once in a while I post something up there. And I have a Patreon and an Etsy. So yeah, you can find all the links on my website, and feel free to, you know, follow me around online. I do, you know, if people have questions for me, I always answer. I always write back.
And to everybody, just a reminder that if you must buy through online delivery moguls, please leave a review for the author.
Please leave a review. Reviews are so important. People have no idea how much that motivates. If you love a book, take the time to, and it doesn't have to be long. It can literally be like two sentences. I love this book. I think this author is brilliant. I think she's got cute cats. I don't know. Whatever it is you
Yeah.
want to say. And people will look at that. There are some sites where all you have to do is leave like the four or five stars, however many stars you think it's worth. You don't even have to write it. Or you can do like the same review in four different places. Nobody cares.
I'm an ESL, right? English is my second language. I can speak English, no problem. Writing it's a completely different cat. So the first time somebody asked me to leave a review on Amazon, I have to write an essay and then review it 20,000 times, and then I post it. And then I learned, like, no, all they need is the book is great, you know?
Yep. Yeah, just say what it was you liked about the book. Had a lot of useful information. To warn me not to do love spells. I don't know. Beautiful cover. Yeah, just so glad this was reissued. It doesn't have to be a whole lot, but every review is like a gift to the author, and a gift to the publisher, and the more people who put reviews, the more likely it is that the book will sell well, and then they'll put out more. So if you want more books, read more reviews.
And
And
remember that
please.
there is no animosity between publishing houses. There is just a whole lot of publishing house. Well, there's not a whole lot, but there are publishing houses, and they are being very good to our authors. So if you bought from one house, if you bought from the other house, who you are benefit is your teacher, ultimately, who is the person who wrote the book. So, thank you so much, Deborah, for being here. This was a pleasure, and I
Well,
hope
thank you
that.
so much for having me. Maybe when Witchcraft on a Shoestring comes out, we could do it again.
There you go. That is wonderful. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until we meet again, my name is Laura Gonzalez. This is Lunatic Mondays. Never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye. Lunatic Mondays is a production of Laura Gonzalez for CSN Podcasts, building bridges of community around the world.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow nature-centered paths. Join us throughout the week for various programming connecting with the community around the world. Please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN Podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. Until next time, many blessings.